This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Friday, Memorial Day weekend, unofficial start of summer coming up. It's going to be a great weekend. And this half hour of the show brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Yes, with great warranties. And guess what? I'm going to be going around in my brand new Sunbury Motors Ford Explorer I bought at the beginning of the month. It's going to be quite the weekend traveling around in that. And not only that, great pre-owned inventory. Saw the lot. Tremendous. And they go over every vehicle, fine-tooth comb. Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Great service department, whether it happens to be extensive or routine. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online, sunburymotors.com. Hottest team in baseball, the Phillies. Todd Zielecki on them in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Welcome back. This half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Let's talk about the hottest team in baseball through the opening 2 months. That's the Philadelphia Phillies. Todd Zielecki. Todd, why have the Phillies been consistently good all season?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and it's the most important thing, is the starting pitching. The starting pitching has been absolutely amazing over this seven-game winning streak. I think the Phillies starters have a 0.51 ERA in this winning streak, and overall this season, the rotation has like a 2.2 something. So it was second best rotation in baseball for the season, an ERA under one in this winning streak, and you know Ranger Suarez is just absolutely been amazing. He's really elevated his game. 25 consecutive scoreless innings. Zach Wheeler is being Zach Wheeler. Christopher Sanchez is picking up where he left off last season. And Aaron Nola, he had that bad first start of the season. He has picked it up since then as well. And the best $2 million bargain, you know, in recent memory, Spencer Turnbull, has also been fantastic pitching in place to Taijuan Walker. So you add all that together. You have a fresh bullpen when they come in because they're not pitching that much, and the offense is picked up. But really, the starting pitching, you know, I can't talk enough about the starting pitching. It has been just fantastic.
And the other, what you bring up, Todd, about the bullpen part, you've got starters going deeper into games because of their pitch efficiency. What long-term effect can that have when we're talking about July and August where maybe the bullpen's needed more?
It's huge. It's, you know, everything kind of adds up over the course of the season. So if, you know, if the starters were struggling the first month of April, man, these relievers, you know, even the first week, they were pitching a lot. And Rob Thompson was getting killed because, you know, he wouldn't pitch guys 3 days in a row, or this guy wasn't available because he had pitched 3 out of the previous 4 games. And now these guys are rested more. And that cumulative effect, if it continues like this, the impact is potentially huge. You know, you have fresher arms later in the season. And then most importantly, of course, you have fresher arms in the postseason, which is really what they're shooting for.
All right, because that brings up something that I've always thought that was important, that a manager not only needs to manage the situation, they also need to manage the game, and they also need to manage the season. And it's that last part that I don't think enough people talk about with a manager. What's your thought on that?
Oh, I agree 100%, and that's why a manager, you know, I guess gets paid what he gets paid, and why a manager gets criticized so much, because I think not enough people keep that in the back of their mind. So Rob Thompson has a rule, first, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 months of the season, really probably the first two, three months of the season, he will not pitch a reliever 3 days in a row. It doesn't matter if Jose Alvarado threw one pitch on Monday and 10 pitches on Tuesday, he will not pitch him on Wednesday. And he will not do that because he knows how much that can grind down the pitcher. Even if he just threw one pitch, getting up, warming up, coming into the game 3 days in a row early in the season can be very taxing. And so he will do that. The manager, you know, Rob Thompson specifically, has gotten a lot of criticism the first week of the season, you know, because he plays Whit Merrifield in left field over Brandon Marshall. How can you possibly not play Brandon Marsh every day? He needs to figure out if he's an everyday player. How can you not play Bryson Stott every single game? Yep. And he should be an everyday player. True. But you also need to play Whit Merrifield every once in a while, Edmundo Sosa every once in a while. You need to play Garrett Stubbs every once in a while, Christian Pache every once in a while. So if an injury happens, or if there's a pinch-hitting situation late in the game, those guys actually have a chance of getting a base hit. So the manager takes a lot of heat for that, but I have absolutely no problem with the way that Rob Thompson has handled his bullpen or his bench, with the idea, again, like you said, Steve, that this stuff will pay off potentially in August, September, and October.
Now, Todd, I was talking to somebody about another team, another player, and I said, usually the second year of a long-term contract, you see the player take off because they're more relaxed, because they feel like in the first year they've got to prove that they're going to earn the money. Trey Turner's hitting .340 right now. Now, how relaxed is he in terms of overall demeanor, play at the plate, everything?
I think he's probably mentally in a much different space. I mean, without a doubt, than he was at this point last year. You know, you signed a $300 million contract, and, you know, he did take less money to come to Philly, so, you know, he definitely wanted to come to Philly. It's not like he took the most money, and it's like, oh, my gosh, I don't know if I can handle Philly. Like, he knew what he was getting into. But still, that said, you want to do well. You know, you want to make a good first impression. You know, Nick Castellanos, his first season in 2022 wasn't very good. Last year, he made the All-Star team. He didn't finish great, but he made the All-Star team. So I think there is a lot to do with that. Whit Merrifield, signed a 1-year, $8 million deal. He's talked about that a lot recently. He homered on Sunday, his first extra base hit of the season. But, you know, he gave a great quote to Matt Gelb from The Athletic, basically saying, you know, it's kind of like in high school, you're trying to impress the girl. And, you know, while you're trying to impress the girl, you stumble all over yourself.
Right.
And I think that's Whit Merrifield, another great example, that guy trying to make a good first impression, starts out slowly. Oh, my gosh, I got a hit. Well, you can't go in the batter's box obsessing about that. You have to let your natural ability take over, and sometimes guys get away from that. So it's good to see Trey doing that. I mean, if Trey can keep this up, even if he hits just anything over 300, I mean, what a huge boost to the lineup it'll be over 162-game season.
How's the team been defensively to this point? Because everybody will always talk about hitting. They'll talk about pitching. But if you play solid defense, I was at the Pirates game the other day where I watched the team with the better lineup. That was the Pirates. They had the better lineup. I have no idea who was in the Red Sox lineup. I know it was on the IL. I know all the guys on the IL. They're actually like names. But they made so many defensive mistakes in the game, they lost the game 6-1. So how have the Phillies been defensively?
The Phillies actually, and that's kind of not a lot of people, you're right, focus on defense, but it's so important. And this Phillies defense is probably the best I can remember in recent years. You know, yeah. For so many years, it was so bad. I mean, so bad, this defense, infield, outfield. But this season, you know, everybody looks at the defense, the new defensive metrics differently. Some people put a lot of stock in them. Some people put zero stock in them. I'm kind of in the middle. I think it kind of gives you a rough estimate of how well a team is playing. If you look at some of those modern metrics, like outs above average, defensive runs saved, the Phillies have one of the better infield defenses right now. Bryce Harper has been tremendous at first base. Bryson Stott's a potential Gold Glove winner. Trey Turner has improved. He had a bad year last year by his standards, and he said it himself, he had a bad year. And I think Alec Bohm has really come a long way defensively at third base. You know, think back to where he was a few years ago. I mean, people were crushing him and making jokes about how bad he was defensively. Boy, this guy's the worst defensive third baseman I've ever seen. And now I would say he's at least average, and that's tremendous. And then center field, you have Johan Rojas, who I think is the best Phillies defensive outfielder in a generation, at least. I talked with Larry Boa about Johan Rojas in spring training. I said, is he as good as Gary Maddox, who won 8 Gold Gloves? Mm-hmm. He said, yeah, he's right up there with Gary Maddox. I said, is he better than Maddox? He says, I'm not ready to go there yet. But that's high praise from Larry Boa.
I agree with that. It's interesting about Bohm because you know, besides doing Penn State football, basketball, I also broadcast the State College Spikes. Well, Bohm started out as the third overall pick at Williamsport, so I did a lot of Alec's games his first season in pro ball, and that's what I told everybody. Defensively, I said he's stiff, he doesn't bend down, I said he's going to be a problem unless he straightens it out. And now I look at him today, and I mean, Todd, I feel like he's a fluid player out there, and I think that's a 180 from what I originally saw.
Totally. You know, you don't – when a ball is hit to third base now, his first couple years, you're like, he's probably – maybe he'll catch this.
Yeah, right.
Maybe he'll make a good throw. Well, now you kind of expect him to make the play. He's not going to make every play. He had an error last night. It was actually ruled a hit, but it was an error. Mm-hmm. It's a play he typically will make. So he's going to have his little bumps here and there. From where he was, and you're right, I remember when he got drafted, scouts were saying, this guy is not going to stick at third base. There's no way he is going to stick at third base. He's just not good enough. And now he's here, and he is good enough.
On paternity leave is Bryce Harper. How long might he be out?
He's supposed to be back for the series finale here in Cincinnati on Thursday.
Okay.
So the next two games he'll miss. Now it's funny because we just talked about Bohm playing third base. I'm guessing that Bohm will move over to first base tonight and tomorrow night. And then you'll have probably Edmundo Sosa or Whit Merrifield play third base. Bryce will be back on Thursday.
Right. Even if he has a tough day at the plate, he's worth the price of admission because he plays so hard. You know, where is he right now? And we're talking at this point he would be 16 months removed from the surgery. So where is he right now?
Yeah, I mean he's 100% healthy, and he's moving around real well. The elbow is a non-factor. I think where he is, you know, he would tell you that he's not happy with his swing right now, or he's not quite there yet. But he's, you know, I think he's hitting some tough luck a little bit. But he's, boy, defensively, Bobby Dickerson's the Phillies infield coach. And I remember last May, the Phillies were in San Francisco, and Bobby was really hitting them some fungos, pretty good ones from all around the diamond to kind of mimic one hoppers, two hoppers to first base. And Bryce is making every play. And I asked Bobby after, that workout, pregame workout in San Francisco. I said, so what do you think? And he's like, I'm not saying now, but I am telling you, this guy can win the Gold Glove.
Wow.
I absolutely believe he can win the Gold Glove. He's like, I'm not saying it's going to happen this year. He might never win it. I'm just saying I think he has the ability to win a Gold Glove. And I agree. I think he's going to be in the conversation for a Gold Glove this year if he keeps playing the way he is.
It's interesting about Rojas because he is – you mentioned about the comparison to Gary Maddux, which is, I think, apropos. Offensively – same thing. I saw him at Williamsport. You could see defensively he was. I mean, he glides the ball. He takes great routes, right? But offensively, like managers find religion when he goes to the plate, right? So where is he offensively right now? And how does Rob manage around it if at all?
Well, So, you know, Johan had that – he hit very well in the regular season last year, like a month and a half. I think he hit over 300. But then he was terrible in the postseason, just swung at everything, missed everything. He was god-awful in the postseason, he'd tell you that. Spring training didn't hit much better. I makes the team because they said they saw enough improvements out of him. Well, the first 10 games of the season, 11, 12 games of the season – he was not doing very well, and in the conversation, it started to turn to, you know, how long is the leash going to be on Johan Rojas? But then, lo and behold, since then, he's actually been hitting the ball really well. The last 9 or 10 games, he's hitting over 300. He hit a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, letter-high fastball, last night off of Hunter Green to right center field for a triple. And, you know, I don't know if he does that the first week of the season. So what I kind of tell people about Johan Rojas is the other 8 guys in the lineup theoretically could all be all-stars if they have, like, really good years.
Yeah.
Certainly Turner, Harper, Schwarber, Real Muto, right? You know, and, you know, Stott has a breakout year, Bohm has a breakout year. They don't need Johan Rojas to hit 300 or even 250.
Right.
I said this the other day, and somebody killed me. Like you're accepting mediocrity from the Phillies dinohood. I'm like, no, I'm not. What I'm saying is, if Johan Rojas, for example, hits 225 with a 650 OPS, that's not very good. But I bet you if you look at the average nine-hole hitter in Major League Baseball, it's probably pretty close to average.
Mm-hmm.
If he's the average nine-hole hitter, whatever those numbers are, with his defense, he's worth playing every day. His defense is that good. And I bet you if you asked Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, Ranger Suarez, Christopher Sanchez, who do you want playing center field every day? Even if he's hitting 225, they would say, I want Johan Rojas. Because he's going to save us a lot of runs.
If you just look at the batting average and make that mistake, you are not a total baseball watcher. The number of runs he saves, the number of bases he cuts off, right, that saves a pitcher and saves an inning, it has value. Now, if he's hitting under 200, now the value diminishes, but he's doing enough. I do have to ask you about the arm issue in baseball right now. They blame the pitch clock and so forth. I'm like, Todd, how much of this has to do with the fact that a lot of these guys go out and they're told to throw as hard as they can for as long as they're out there? Does that have something to do with this?
I think that has most of everything to do with it. Now, does everything play a role? I've heard some pitchers say, well, now they can't use sticky stuff to grip the ball, so now they have to grip the ball tighter.
Yeah.
That's tightening my tendons when I release the ball, my ligaments when I release the ball. I'm sure there's something to that. I'm sure there's maybe something to the fact that you don't have as much time to recover after throwing a max effort pitch. But I think if you look at the increase in UCL injuries over the last 20 years with the increase of velocity and the increase of breaking ball usage,
yep,
I think that correlates as much as anything, personally. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I don't know who, you know, but I look at those things and I say, guys are throwing harder than ever. And the body is, your arm is not built to throw 100 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not. So you keep throwing 100 miles an hour, you know. And that's why I think, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with Paul Skenes in Pittsburgh, but, you know, I've looked. For his first three minor league starts, he's only been around 60 pitches, three innings. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like, is he going to be able to throw six innings for 100 pitches in the big leagues? You know, that's going to be interesting to see how he handles that.
Well, the Pirates were here for several years before the Cardinals came back, and they are notorious in that organization for pitch counts for their minor league pitchers. I mean, notorious for it. And I'm not so sure it works. I mean, to be honest with you, Maddux and Glavine seem to not miss any starts. So I don't know.
Right. And that's what's kind of interesting about the Phillies rotation, to be honest with you, because I was just looking up this today. The five Phillies starters right now combined, all five combined, four-seam fastball, two-seam fastball, they rank 24th in baseball in average velocity.
Yep.
So this is not a rotation that throws hard. This is a rotation that generally knows how to pitch.
Yes.
Move in and out, up and down, change speeds.
Yep.
And they're not, you know, nobody on this staff is throwing 98 mile an hour fastballs. They're, you know, Ranger Suarez is 91, 92s. Aaron Nola is 91, 92. Tywan Walker, and he comes back, you know, he's going to be 88, 89, 91. You know, Spencer Turnbull's 91, 92. But they can all locate and they can all mix speeds and change speeds and locate. And yeah. It's not a bad way to win.
Yeah, it's not a bad way to win. And also, like, you know, you let your defense do a little bit of work, and if they do their job, you're fine. All right.
Exactly right.
Todd, an absolute pleasure. As always, everybody can tune in to the Philly show with Jim Salisbury, Ruben Amaro Jr., and Todd as well. Thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. See you. Thanks. Take care.
Todd Zielecki and the Phillies. Next half hour, we'll talk about the Indy 500 this weekend on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
You want your young athlete to get the most out of life and NIL. You need a roadmap, a strategic approach. NIL Game Changers help student athletes earn while they learn in their collegiate journey. Driven by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents and content media designers, they'll guide both student and family, starting with high school students looking toward college and those already in college. Get a seasoned team of marketing experts with a background in athletics and coaching. Visit NILGameChangers.org, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour brought to you by NIL Game Changers, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities for both athletes and businesses. Visit NILGameChangers.org to start your journey today. Indianapolis 500 this weekend. Look, that's the bottom line. Is Kevin Herr is the expert on the Indy 500. And it's the only IndyCar race, Kev, they actually race, right?
That's not true.
I believe it's the only one anybody knows of.
It's the only one you watch, yes. Definitely the case that it's the only one you watch.
I think I speak for America.
I've seen them all. I've watched the practices. I've watched some of the qualifying. I've seen them all so far. This is the first oval. So this is what makes this. I like that idea, by the way. I love the fact that this is the first time that they've gotten on an oval this year instead of doing these short tracks before the 500, because you have no idea what car you have now.
Really?
And it's been a tough week at Indianapolis, too, Steve, because of the rain. Matter of fact, they might not even be able to have Fast Friday.
What?
Fast Friday is where they get a little extra boost, yeah. So the speeds go up about 3 to 5 miles an hour for qualifying, and they may not be able to have a Fast Friday. So we may be looking at Saturday on qualifying day as being the first time that these drivers have run with the added boost. So that would make things interesting.
You're making stuff up now.
Well, I could, but this time I'm not.
Really?
Okay.
You insist. So nobody can really tell to this point, except that the usual suspects are involved in the race, who have done well and have cranked it out on ovals before. So who are the usual suspects that we need to watch for this time?
Well, you absolutely have to have, you know, a willpower on the radar. I mean, there's a guy that's led
that
more laps.
You have no regard for willpower at all.
I'm not a big, you know what? I take that back, Steve. I am more of a willpower fan over the last 5 years than I ever have been. I think he has been a different person in interviews and a different driver. For many years, it was all about what people did to him. Now, and he attributes this to being a father now. He actually has really changed his image a little bit, not only in interviews, but on the track. Now it's, you know, he'll admit to a mistake, which I don't remember him doing very often in his earlier part of his career.
Hmm. All right, so willpower's one.
Pato O'Ward's been very, very fast and continues to be here in the limited practice that they've had this week. And the one of the Kiwis, of course, there's two, actually. Scott McLaughlin, you have to watch out for him with the Penske team. And I think that Scott Dixon is always somebody that's on the radar, especially if this becomes a fuel mileage race. This guy can feather a throttle like nobody I've ever witnessed in any motorsports. He can save fuel when other guys are just struggling to hit numbers.
All right. Others, though, I mean, teams mean a lot, too. Owners mean a lot in the sport. Who are the Penske guys to watch?
I'll tell you what, Steve, it has been a very tough year for Penske. You know, he may own the series, but he has had suspensions in his team. His team principal's basically been suspended in Tim Cindric. They've been stripped wins earlier this year. That is a team right now that is in a lot of turmoil, and there's a lot of finger-pointing going on there. But Scott McLaughlin has been the leader there, and Will Power has been very consistent.
Okay. Ganassi.
Well, I mean, there you're looking at Scott, you know, that's a Dixon thing. And he's been, Ganassi's always in the top at Indianapolis. Matter of fact, I think he's won, I think the last four or five Indy 500s. I mean, his team is always right around the top.
Why?
You know, that's a great question. What is it that,
that's why I asked it.
But that's what teams like Andretti right now are asking as well. We've got four, you know, Andretti, Michael's looking at it like, we got four cars in this. Why aren't we more competitive in the 500 on a regular basis with these Ganassi teams and the Penske's? There's no real one thing that I think stands out with Ganassi. No matter who's been in the seat, you know, they've always been competitive. And maybe that goes back to the garage. Maybe that goes back to what they're doing in the garage.
The garage, huh? Okay, so you've never been to the race, have you?
I have not been to the 500. It is absolutely on the bucket list.
It bothers you I've walked on the track.
Yes, it does. It does bother me. I do want to go up to Watkins Glen, though, and take the Kia on the Watkins Glen track when they open it up sometime.
Does it bother you I've been to Watkins Glen?
No. Just Indianapolis.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I've flown over Indianapolis, but it was too dark and cloudy to see it.
How could you miss it?
It was too dark and cloudy.
Oh. So in the road racing to this point, which is as exciting as watching paint dry.
Actually, this year it has been more exciting.
Yeah. Why? It's what they passed once?
Well, they have the push to pass.
Yeah.
And they're giving them more push to pass time, which gives you an extra 10 horsepower for as long as you want. You have, I normally on road courses, it's like 90 seconds that you can use at a time. And, you know, drivers are using it both offensively and defensively, and it's really opened things up in a lot more passing zones that wouldn't normally be passing zones, especially at places like Long Beach.
It's interesting because Rob Blackman, good friend of mine, who does Purdue basketball, works the pits of the Indy 500 on radio.
I knew I heard that name somewhere.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Oh, yeah, come on. He's Zach Eadie's announcer. And you're all like, he's all, like all excited because Will Power got four tires and he's out of there. Like one day. Okay. And I had a long talk with Rob last year. We do the Big Ten golf outing. Right? And guess who is not a part of the Big Ten golf outing this year?
Well, isn't that because it's race week?
Yes, it's next week, so he's out.
That's what I was going to say. He's out. Yeah, that's carb day. That's probably right around carb day.
So I was talking to Don Fisher, who does Indiana. Now, Don never had to work the 500 in terms of announcing the race, but he had to cover it for a long time. He goes, I hate that thing.
I know one guy that covered it for many years that we had on the air, probably about 9 years ago now, and did an outstanding job and loved every minute of it. Was Paul Page.
Well, Paul Page, yeah, but he was the play-by-play guy.
True. That's a good point. Right, we had Vince Welsh on, too, when
yeah,
ABC
but Vince
carried it.
Was, again, if you're working the event on the live broadcast,
I guess
it's a big difference between covering it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Okay, it's another accident. I'm going to go to soda.
Great, I got to go to the Infield Care Center again.
Yeah, that's good. How's everybody doing? All right, okay. That looks like he'll be fine. So through the road racing part, who actually has excelled? I'm talking about team-wise, where you can kind of tell there's a sync with the team and the driver.
I would have, up until a couple of weeks ago before the penalties, I would have said the Penske team and drivers. But now that's completely out of sync with some of the violations that they've had. I think it's been more the driver and on race day that has been able to make the adjustments that they've needed. And maybe a strategist with a tire change, because when they're running on road courses, they're running a softer tire, an alternate tire, which is a red, and a black, which is the harder tire that lasts longer. So obviously you're faster on the softer tires, but the black tires and the harder compound last longer. And that has been what's been the big difference with a lot of these drivers and their teams, is finding the right mix at the right time on these road courses. And, last week...
Well, what kind of tire do they need on this course, though?
Well, they're only going to have the one. They only have the hard compound tire. So the playing field is level there.
Are they all Goodyears or are they Firestones?
Firestones.
Okay.
Yep, they're all Firestones. So the playing field's level that way. That's why Indianapolis is unique for even an oval because of how many pit stops. I think the average pit stop is five. There's five to seven pit stops during the 500-mile race. So really a lot of the pressure of making the right changes, making everything smooth, I mean, trying to be perfect minimum of five times is on that pit crew.
What are the odds that the 500 ends under a yellow flag going at 60 miles an hour?
Painfully high. I am not a big fan of green, white, checkered the way NASCAR does it. Okay. I think that throws in too many variables that teams can't plan for in a race. And like, okay, well, are we going to have enough fuel if this goes an extra two laps? If it goes an extra four laps, what happens? That's what is the wrong part of it. What I do like about what IndyCar has done over the last couple of years is they've red flagged the race. Mm-hmm. So nobody works on any of the cars. The cars are stopped. The engines are off. They come back, and they guarantee at least they have two laps to finish the race. That is a way to do it that I think is a little bit more fair.
All right, hot lap early, Pato Award. has been the one that's put in the hot lap, 228-861. Colton Herta, 224-182.
Watch out for him, too. He's one of those drivers on the Andretti team. He's their lead driver right now, Steve. And he has matured so much as a driver since that first win down in Texas.
And then there's Linus Lundqvist, who went 225-621, but hit the wall. In turn two. So those are some of the updates from the track as to what they've been doing. Now there's the Kyle Larson part of it. How intrigued are you by Kyle Larson as a driver in this race?
I think he's driving for Arrow McLaren. And that makes it intriguing to me, because Arrow McLaren is one of these newer teams in IndyCar that have expanded from Formula One and Formula Two. So I'll be interested to see how much they've learned. And he was at the race last year. It'll be interesting to see how much he learned from not being in a IndyCar competitively in any race at any point in his career.
Yeah, and he said he wasn't really all that upset about he wasn't able to get any laps in. Because they only had a 23-minute practice the other day.
Yeah, it's been tough.
No, Indy just feels that's all you need. What kind of race is this?
But now this is what bugs me, though, about these guys that want to do the double. And the women that want to do a double, because Danica Patrick did it a few years, too. The problem I have is NASCAR's inflexibility. This, to me, is a plus for both series. These are two series that had a weekend at Indianapolis and ran the road course together a few years ago. IndyCar on Saturday, NASCAR on Sunday. I thought it was a great merger between the two series. But here's what happens. Carl Larson runs the 500. If it runs on time and ends on time, no delays, no long cautions, he hops a flight, goes to Charlotte for the race. Well, he has to go to the back of the field because he missed the driver's meeting. That is the most ludicrous thing I have heard. He missed the driver's meeting. It's not like this is a brand new track and there's new things to learn. Can't you fill him in? Yeah, Can't you bring him in via Zoom or something?
Yeah, but it's a 600-mile race. It doesn't matter if you start from the back.
But again, that's a drawback.
I understand your point, I completely understand your point. But this isn't a 200-mile race. This is a 600-mile marathon with a...
You're right.
In NASCAR, it's like 72 stages or something like that. So...
and the other good... Yeah, it's exactly right. With 800 cautions, yeah. Especially in the last 20 laps. But that's a whole different topic.
Right.
I think, though, what the negative is, you've got sponsors on that car that aren't going to get the normal... exposure they would if Carl Larson was running where he qualified. And I'm assuming he qualifies highly. They haven't done that yet, but I'm assuming he'd qualify highly. However, the other side of the coin is here's a guy that's driving the double, so there's going to be a lot of television coverage on him and how he's mm-hmm. recovering and things like that. So maybe in that aspect it balances out. But I just think it's the inflexibility of NASCAR that makes a lot of these drivers sure. go, yeah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah,
I don't want to start from the back.
And Jimmy Johnson announces and he races all in the same day. So,
yeah, that's the first one there. He's going to pull the announcer for Indianapolis mm-hmm. for the NBC broadcast and then race the 600 later.
All right. A couple other names to watch in this. Let's start with Alexander Rossi. You mentioned Arrow McLaren. All right. Rossi has won this race before.
Yeah, and he is another one of those very aggressive drivers. He's what the I guess Townsend Bell likes to call the elbows out kind of driver. So he'll stick a nose in there in turn one in situations that maybe a lot of other drivers wouldn't. But the difference is he's able to complete that pass where a lot of other guys would be in the wall.
And then there's Joseph Newgarden.
He's just so solid. I mean, he's another one that reminds me of a younger Scott Dixon.
This is Rick Mears.
That's a really good comparison.
I shock you with this stuff, don't I?
That was a little impressive.
I shock you that I actually know it.
That's actually kind of impressive, yeah.
Patient, understands it's 500 miles, right? stays out of trouble, picks his spot, wins the race.
And I'm not going to lie, I'm fond of this driver, but Marco Andretti has looked very good in a limited practice. He's not running the full series this year. He is running for the family team in the 500. But the big difference between this and the last couple of years, he's been running truck series and ARCA races. So he is very familiar. He is very much in sync with racing, not just coming into a car cold as he had in the last couple of years.
And the other part, you love the spectacle of it. They start the broadcast at 11 a.m. You're locked in at 11 a.m.
You love every story.
You love everything leading into it before they drop the green flag.
Jack Arut was one of the guys that made me love racing. You know, growing up watching him do pit reporting, and his book on the Indy 500 is just fantastic. I enjoyed reading that. I've read it a couple of times now with the stories that he has. But he's the reason. He used to tell great stories. And then you had Jim McKay, who did play-by-play for many years. Mm-hmm. And again, another great storyline teller. Not only could he call the race, but he could also tell the story behind it. And that's what I enjoyed.
Jack Arut lives in Suffield, Connecticut.
Does he still own the racetrack
He owns Stafford Motor Speedway. Suffield, Connecticut is directly across the river from Enfield, where I grew up. So that's Jack and I always had that connection when we talk about stuff.
You know, you've been on his. He had the football show for years.
I've been on his show many times, and he's been on our show.
Yes.
One of the classiest guys. I'm a big Jack Arut guy. Big. Well, I enjoyed this. America tuned out in droves, but I enjoyed it.
I will be very interested to see the way qualifying goes this weekend. They'll fill the top 12. Mm. Then they'll be locked in. Then everybody gets one run at that. Then that 12's locked in. Then they fill 20 through, I think it's 29. Mm. And then the last three spots are going to be open for Sunday. And there are four. There is one extra car than they have room in the field for. So somebody's going to get bumped like Graham Rahal did last year.
Oh, look, I just brought up on my iPad the IndyCar series. They actually have other races. All right, so.
Hey, you want to know a next race that you should watch, Steve? Milwaukee at the end of the season. The Milwaukee Mile is back. That is a fast little bull ring. And boy, what a lot of passing you'll see in that one.
Okay. You do know it's August 31st.
Yeah.
I am at West Virginia that day doing football.
But there's such a thing called a DVR.
There's such a thing as having interest to program the DVR.
I'll listen to you and still program the DVR to watch it later.
Good. Then enjoy it. You can let me know how it turned out.
I will let you know.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you a lot.
Thank you.
This half hour brought to you by NIL Game Changers. Go to nilgamechangers.org. Ray Dittinger, next half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK.